Merlin by Marlon Klingensmith. I've always been able to do things that others could not. All my life I have been an object of distrust to everyone I have met. There are many who fear what I might be able to do, and many who pity my situation in light of that fear. That fear has made my life in some ways easier. It is the only shield I have against the hate many people feel when they see me. It has brought me momentary friends who think they can benefit from my power, but fear does not breed love, only hate and distrust. There have been many times, with problems both solved and created, that I have used my power to help. I was constantly trying to prove that I could do some good. Sometimes my interference did more harm than good, and there are many things, looking back, that I wish I had done when I had the chance. But any chance to prove myself is now gone. My mother was a witch woman, a potion maker, and the healer of a small village on the northern border of Brittany. I am told that my father appeared and stayed with my mother a few months. Nobody knew where he came from, and nobody knew what happened to him other than that he left to travel farther south. Something must have gone wrong, or he decided to leave my mother forever. I will not pass judgment on my father, but his sudden appearance, as if he walked off the lake, and his quick departure, along with my mother's reputation for sorcery, combined to make me, in the eyes of the villagers, the son of a demon and the bearer of evil powers. I had no reason to suppose that the villagers' hasty conclusions might be nearer to the truth than I, or even my mother, had previously thought, until I was nearly 10 years old. At first there was little to show that I was unusual, nothing but a few coincidental dreams. I was running through the forest, playing keep away with Rags, my dog, who I claimed when one of the hunters got rid of a mixed litter. Rags was not a noble dog. He was a mutt, and a particularly patchy one at that. But he was my mutt, and he did not care what the villagers thought of me. I had just managed to wrench the chewed stick from his mouth when the air was rent by the echoing howl of a wolf. Rags paused, ears perked, and nose twitching. The wolf howled again, and this time Rags answered, not with a greeting howl, but with a hunting cry as he tore off into the suddenly night-dark forest. The wolf's cry came echoing to Rags, to me, as he ran through the night. The dog and I became tangled together until I could not tell what part of my thought was mine and what part was his. I saw the forest in different shades as we tore through. I heard the cry of the wolf as if it were right next to me. I knew where the cry was coming from, and I could smell the wolf, a terrible, musky, yet alluring scent. It was then that I saw them, the glowing eyes in the darkness. She greeted me as she stepped out of the forest, and I woke. I told my mother about the dream when I woke a second time from it, and found the sun reflecting off the mist of the lake. I could tell that she did not think it was anything, or that she thought I was making it up, though after I tried to convince her that something bad was going to happen to Rags, she had me tie him up. It was a week later, when I thought all trouble was over and had begun to doubt the truth of the dream that seemed to tell the future. I untied Rags, and he picked up his stick, ready to play. I took it, and we fought for it until he broke away and ran towards the forest. It was only when we were a fair ways into the forest and already through three sticks that I found myself walking in my dream. There we were, playing in the forest. The light fell just as it had before, and Rags was moving towards me like he had in the dream. This was it. The cry of the wolf sounded mournful in the near distance. Rags perked up, scenting the change in the wind and listening to the last echoing notes of the howl. The howl sounded again, and he answered with the same hunting call. "No!" I shouted, and I felt the release of power that kept Rags where he was. I stood there, trembling at the change I had felt. Rags looked at me reproachfully. A moment later, I heard the wolf howl again, this time much closer. Rags turned. The first thing I saw were the eyes. She stepped out of the forest, gray and black mottled together in the filtered green light, golden eyes aglow. I was trembling. I had changed the dream. When she moved, it was with speed that was terrifying. She charged towards me. Rags jumped in her path, and she brushed him aside. Rags jumped again and caught the wolf by the back leg. She whirled and tore out his throat. Rags did not make a sound as he died. He just fell and lay limp. The wolf turned towards me and leapt. I do not know exactly what happened next. I pulled away and was blinded by a flash of light. I picked myself up off the ground, thinking it all might have been a dream again. But there was Rags' torn body and the untouched form of a gray wolf. Looking back, I can see the choice. I could see where I went wrong. Rags was not slain in the dream. When one of the villagers found me where I had collapsed, more from the shock of using my magic for the first time than for any other reason, he carried me to my mother, whether from fear or pity I do not know. But the rumor of the incident spread and grew until I had sacrificed my dog and a hunting wolf to some evil deity and strengthened my dark powers. Most of the villagers had been willing to talk to me, though they all tried to avoid me to some extent. They'd always done what I wanted, whether from fear or from some power of persuasion I did not know of, I do not know. After this, they began to think that I had the power to convince them to do whatever I wanted them to do. They decided that they would have no part of it, and so they tried to avoid me as much as possible. I managed to convince even myself that I did not want them to notice me in the first place. I was interested in their doings and watched them. I think that I must have seen more than they would have guessed, certainly more than they would have been comfortable with. I could look at a group of people and see the relationships, the rivalries, worries. I could see their lives in part just by looking at them. I saw what no one else did. I took these snippets of life for granted. As I walked through the village, I saw the whole story. It bolstered me in my separation and made me realize how human they were, even in their fear of my power. My powers of prediction went deeper than just my dreams, which were difficult to understand at best. I know now that the dreams were only to tell me of a choice that was coming. They were not to tell me what would be best, or to warn me of what would happen if I failed. They were to show me one possible course. The rest was up to me. It was during the fall, and I was watching the village from my perch in the old oak that grew on the square. I was fascinated with life. Fane, one of the village hunters, was leaving for one of the two nearby fort cities that guarded our village from the raiding barbarians. The soldiers had requested a scout that was familiar with the border on both sides, and he had volunteered, even though he was leaving a young daughter behind. I watched as he prepared to leave. I watched the two young men who were traveling with him, trying to hurry him up. They were eager to be going, and it seemed that he was reluctant. He made a somewhat hasty but heartfelt goodbye to his daughter, and walked out of the village. The girl sat on the porch where he had left her. Fane looked back once, and winced when he saw her crying. I jumped down from the tree and walked over to her, placing a hand on her shoulder. She looked up at me, frightened by my presence. I did what I could to calm her. "Don't worry. You will see your father again." I do not know why, but she trusted me. She trusted the forked tongue of the father of lies. I knew it was true, but I did not think of every possible meaning when I said it. Maybe my words changed nothing, and I only spoke truth. I did not speak to her again until her father returned. He came home alone. None of the men who had gone with him had survived. The soldiers were all dead. Only he had escaped the barbarian raiders. The patrol had been ambushed and totally destroyed. He had survived by a fluke. Somehow the barbarians did not notice him. They did not touch him, but he was forced to watch the raiders as they brutally slew the entire party. He was alive, but he regretted it. He was greeted by his joyful daughter, who told him of my prediction. He owed me his life, and he feared me for it. The rumor spread, this time little exaggerated. I was an abomination in their eyes, and all I did was tell the truth as I saw it. But Dunwin trusted me. I had told her true, and she had seen her father come home again. She did not consider my prophecy as the others had. Where they saw me slay an entire patrol of slain trained soldiers with a word, she saw me protecting her father, and she loved me for it. She became the only friend I had. Dunwin became closer to me than even my mother, who had always been more worried about where she could find the next rare herb than she was with my welfare. I spent much of my time with Dunwin after that. We talked and played games, and the others left us alone. Even her father did not keep her from being with me. He felt both indebted and cursed by me. We continued in this way for 2 years, and then she stopped coming. At first I feared that her father was keeping her in. Then I had a dream. It was not the same as the first. It did not seem to be directing my magic, just a choice, and not even one that I would have hesitated at making. All it did was tell me that now was the time to make it. Dunwin was dying, lying on her bed, pale and fevered. Her father was talking in the background. "First he thrusts me into the battle and forces me to watch as my friends are slain, only to leave me alive and steal my daughter from me. Now he has decided to take her away from me completely." The next day I rose and went to Dunwin's house. Fane opened the door, looking worn and tired. He went cold when he saw me. "You," he said. I could see the anger and hate welling up in him, and it hurt me like nothing I had ever felt before. I saw myself through his eyes, a monster intent on destroying his soul. "Go away," he said. "Go away and leave us alone." When I told my mother, she began stuffing various dried herbs in her cloth bag. "You cannot help me here," she gave me a shrewd look. "He would not let you near her. It's not your fault, and this time there is nothing you can do about it." It took another week, but in the end my mother managed to cure Dunwin, and she was able to leave the house, but she was not allowed to speak with me again. Fane would not even speak with me himself, afraid that I would talk his daughter away from him. I was bitter. I even hated him for taking my only friend away from me. The next months were difficult to me. I was plagued with strange dreams, waking and sleeping, but they did not seem true dreams, but for their strength, I would have discounted them as nothing more than the normal nightmares and worries. The dreams were muddled and confused. Terrible and sorrowful images swirled together into a frighteningly chaotic vision, all the more fearful for its ambiguity. I feared that it was a foretelling dream. I could not understand it. In every way I could make out, it seemed to be foretelling the destruction of our village, the burning, the image of my mother, Dunwin and the other villagers, dying in terrible ways. I could not bear them, but I could not rid myself of them. I grew weak from lack of sleep, and the villagers shunned me for my change. After a month, the villagers were still there, and I was forced to reconsider the dream. If it was like the others, it was a signpost, warning me of a coming choice and giving me a glimpse of what lay down the path, but only showing one possible way. I woke early after a repetition of the same dream. I recognized it now in many guises. The Sitikin stone house was cold, and it was always was in the early morning. The only light came from the small fire, where my mother was preparing some strange draught. I was not aware of any noise I had made, yet she looked up at me over the fire. "Good morning," she said gently. Her eyes caught the light of the fire, flashing golden and shimmering in the reflected light. She seemed alive as I had never seen her before. "I know you are awake. I have a task for you. To take your mind off the dream." "How can I? It is a choice that I do not understand." "So you cannot see all the ways ahead. You are not God, nor are you the devil. Does that not comfort you?" I had never thought of it like that. I had expected to know what was ahead and what way I should choose. I could only nod. She smiled. "There are some things in this life that no one can know. You cannot change the course of time." She paused. "I need some more dragon heart. Run down to the lake and fetch some." I slid out of bed and pulled on my cloak as I left. My mother had taught me something of herb lore. I was familiar with many of the local herbs, and many of their uses. There was true knowledge behind much of the show that my mother used to keep up her reputation as an herb witch. But she knew much, but she did not know everything. There was little to distract me from my worries as I made my way through the village. There had been times when I would go around the village to avoid the fearful stares, but this time I knew that there would be few people up to see me, and I feared that the village would vanish before I could see it again. The village was all I knew. It was all that I loved. The dream had come to me as a warning. If it was shown to me, there must be something I could do to stop it. But would I know when the time came? A low fog had crept off the lake during the night, shrouding everything in a way that blurred lines together. The mist calmed me. It made me feel like I was truly at home. Nobody could tell who I was from a distance, and they feared the fog that came from the lake. It was reported to change things it touched. Strange creatures were said to come from the fog, and voices. Things disappeared in the fog. Animals, crops, even young children sometimes. But I knew it would not harm me. I had never been all the way to the lake in this kind of weather before. I had felt the pull, but I had resisted it. At the water's edge, the mist seemed to open upwards and outwards. I could see the shore on either side, where the forest crept down to the waterline. The water of the lake seemed to ripple with life of its own, making everything seem to dance in its reflection. I searched for the peculiar wildflower known as Dragonheart. It was a long-stemmed flower with thin leaves, blooming in both the spring and the fall in varying shades of bright red or blue. The only place I had ever found any was down by the shores of the lake, either short ways into the water or farther out. I made a careful search, making sure to collect some of the other plants and herbs that my mother would use in her potions. It took me a while, but I found the plant I was looking for. A cluster of Dragonheart grew in the water, showing clearly, a bright blue against the moving grayness of the fog. I waded out to pick the flowers. As I did so, I noticed movement in the lake beneath me. I looked down. A ghostly image of a lady in a white robe was watching me. Her pale face was turned towards me, her crystal blue eyes piercing in their gaze, her hair swirling around her head in the current of the lake. She nodded once before she vanished back into the depths. During the next 12 years, I was haunted by two dreams. One told of the destruction of the village. The other showed me the pale face in the lake. I could not escape either dream. One was a horror that must be averted at any cost. The other I did not know. The lake was calling me to free me from the village. But I did not know where it was calling me or whence it came. I saw our village burn many times in those years. I saw it so often that I no longer knew what it meant. It was only a vision, cluttered with meaning I could not make out. In those years I did little magic. I kept a conversation with Dunwin, even though we were not allowed to be together. I had ways that others did not. I spent much time talking those years, talking and listening with Dunwin and with the animals around the village. It was the birds who taught me what it was to fly. The animals came to adore me, even as the villagers came to distrust me even more. I did not understand much of what I did. At first I figured that others must also be able to talk with animals, and they can to some extent, though it is a one-way understanding. They can teach the animals to do what they ask. But they do not often wonder what the animals might ask of them. It was shortly after my 21st birthday that I had the dream for the last time. A dragon swept out of the swirling images, a terrible serpentine beast with spear-blade scales, dagger teeth, and a spiked mace at its tail. It landed in a shower of sparks, shattering into 1,000 pieces. Some of the sparks caught on the thatched roofs of the village, and it was in that fearsome flickering light that I saw the lifeless shards rise from the ground, raiders springing up from the shattered dragon. They ran through the village, burning and slaying all they saw. I saw little before my vision clouded, but I had seen enough. I thought I would wake, but I found myself facing 2 moons, staring at me from a starless sky, 2 bright orbs, lifeless eyes fixed upon me. In 2 moons' time, it would happen in 2 moons. If I tried to warn the villagers, they would only mock me. They did not trust me. Why should they believe me when it mattered most? I had no reason to know what I did, so I must make a reason. I'm going for a journey into the wild, I told my mother the next morning. I'll bring what herbs I find. She looked at me oddly. Do what you must. I had made my choice. I would do all that I could to make the villagers believe me. I would leave for a time, and I would return before the time was up. I would report that I had seen the raiders and that they were coming here. I would be blamed for bringing them on to the village, but they would do what they could to prepare. On reflection, this was not the best choice. It would require perfect timing. I did not think it out fully at the time, but I knew I had to act to save the village. Looking back on it, I see that while it was not the best choice, it was a right choice. I left the village, equipped for a long journey into the wild. I told Dunwin before I left. She agreed to do what she could while I was gone. I wandered many days, staying close to the village. I relied on the birds to bring me news of any groups of soldiers coming towards us. I do not know how it happened. They must have passed by in the dark of night, for the birds brought me no warning. They were past me before I received word of their coming. Indeed, the first sign I saw was the dark smudge over the village. First, I did not know it for what it was. But the village was on fire. I ran fast. I arrived before it was over, but not long. The village men were fighting, but it was a hopeless fight. There were too many of them. I could have fled at the point, and I almost did. What could I do to help them? What could I do against 100 men? But I did not want to let them die alone. I could not leave the villagers who hated me. I could not leave my mother, who never truly loved me. But most of all, I could not leave Dunwin, my only friend in the world. By the time I entered the village, there was not much to aid. The raiders had no more resistance, and were running through the village, taking what they wanted and destroying everything else. They took no notice of my slender robed figure as I made my way through the wreckage. The survivors, it seemed, were being rounded up in the central square. Dunwin was there, cradling her father's head in her lap. Tears were streaming down her face, but she seemed unhurt. She looked up as I approached, shrinking from me in fear. She did not recognize me for a moment. When she did, she leaned forward. "There is nothing left," she whispered. "Nothing!" I failed. I was miserable at myself. Dunwin's father opened his eyes. They were misted over, but he saw me. "You," he hissed. "You have brought this upon us." Dunwin looked down at him. "No, father. He was trying to stop them. He was trying to warn you." She brushed her hair back from her eyes. "You would not listen to talk of dreams and foretelling, but you might have believed his true sight." He looked back at me. "You still believe his lies?" "No, I believe his truth." Fane sat up. The blood matting his hair made him look older, frailer. "I might be able to create a distraction that will give you time to leave here. I do not know how much time, but I will do what I can," I said. Dunwin nodded as I stepped away. You will know when to act," I almost choked on my words. "Whatever happens, don't come back." I moved to the center of the square, in front of the prisoners. I do not know if it was my magic that had obscured their vision, or if it was just the fact that they did not expect to see me. But they saw me now. They came running towards me, inhuman it seemed in their speed. My anger at them, at what they had done to the village, swept over me, burning through me like white fire. They stopped. One of them asked me a question, but I could not understand his words. When I did not answer, he reached for his sword. My hand leapt out, knocking the blade from his grasp before it was fully drawn. 4 of them grabbed me, trying to pull me to the ground by sheer weight. I lashed out with my hands and feet. I do not remember it clearly. Everything was moving. I think I may have killed one of the men barehanded before I made my choice. I had power. I would use it. With that thought, the world exploded into white flame, bursting outwards and throwing the raiders from me, killing them instantly. The cleansing fire swept through the village, burning all in its path and clearing the village. When it was over, I stood shakily. There was little to be seen but bodies, scorched and burnt. I looked around to see if the villagers were still there. They were gone, fled towards the lake. They had escaped. With that, I collapsed from exhaustion. The magic that had flowed through me was too much. I was so tired. I awoke to the gentle lapping of the waters as it pulled at me. I was floating across the lake. How I had gotten there, I do not know, but I was safe. It was not long after I awoke that I ran up against dry ground. I lay there for a while before I rose. I was on the shore of an island. I could not see anything more than 10 feet out of the water. Everything vanished into the mists. I turned. A crystal city rose from the island, white towers and graceful walls. The lady I had seen in the lake stood there. She looked at me and smiled. Welcome home, lost one. So I came to my true home, the home of my father. Here I face another choice, different from any other. Should I stay here with the last of my kind, immortal and powerful, on our little isle? Do I stay here and learn how to control the magic that is my heritage? Or do I go back to the mainland and live my life out as a mortal? Now that I have written this down, I can see what I should do. I must learn to control my magic. But I will not close the door that will allow me to return to a normal life. The end.